My name is Ross. I'm from Nebraska, and I've never left the state. My big brother Tommy moved to New York City a few years back. He got accepted to university there, and I felt really excited for him. He was going to be the first member of our family to really make something of himself. Before he left, he promised to keep me posted every week. But the longer he stayed there, the less I heard from him. Last summer, I finally got some time off of work and asked him if I could come up and visit. He seemed reluctant at first, but I kept pestering him until he said yes. I booked the cheapest flight and planned to stay there for 2 weeks. For the first few days, I barely saw him. He said he had a lot of summer classes to keep him busy, and I ended up going to a lot of touristy places myself. It was a bit overwhelming for a small-town guy, but I was able to enjoy myself. The few times I did see Tommy, he seemed like a completely different person. I had heard that city life could change someone, but I never expected that my own brother would become so irritable and distant. I assumed he was stressed out over classes, especially because he refused to talk about them. I asked him if he could show me around his campus, but he flat out refused. By my fourth day there, I had barely seen him, and I demanded that we at least spend the evening together. I hadn't been to Times Square yet, so I thought that'd be a good place for us to check out. He seemed reluctant, but eventually he gave in. I told him I would treat him to dinner at whatever restaurant he chose. We arrived at Times Square just around sunset, and it seemed like such a magical, busy place. Tommy and I walked around for a bit, but he seemed to be rushing everywhere. I told him to slow down, but he wouldn't listen. I tried to stop at a couple of different stores, including the giant M&M factory, but he just kept hurrying around and looking nervous. We passed by a group of people in ratty-looking costumes. They were dressed up like famous cartoon characters and stuff, but their outfits were slightly off. For copyright reasons, I guess. I'd heard about these kinds of people before. They would pressure you into taking a photo with them and then charge you an exorbitant amount of money for it. It was a total scam. Out of all the things we could do in Times Square, I did not want to go near those guys. I thought that Tommy would agree because he was a local and knew better than to fall for a scam like that. But to my surprise, he saw the costume people up ahead and started dragging me towards them. I told Tommy that I wasn't interested, but he said, "Come on, let's go check it out." He led me toward a man dressed like Elmo from The Muppets, except the costume was the wrong color and the googly eyes looked like they were about to fall off. Tommy leaned close to fake Elmo and whispered something that I couldn't hear. Then he backed away, and Elmo started approaching me. I assumed that my brother knew the actor inside the costume. Maybe we can get a free photo or something. But when Elmo reached me, he didn't seem friendly at all. He grabbed me by the wrist and started pulling me away. I tried to pull myself out of this grip, but I couldn't. His furry hands clamped down on my arm. I called for Tommy to help me, but he just stood there, watching. Elmo violently dragged me through the crowd. We passed a bunch of people along the way, but they just stared at us. No one bothered to help. Even though we were surrounded by hundreds of people, it was like we were totally alone. Tommy disappeared in the crowd. I wasn't sure, but it definitely seemed like he'd set me up. But why? Why would he want me to get hurt? And how would he know that this costume creep was such a psycho? Elmo pulled me further away from the crowd, then pushed me up against a wall. Three other mascots joined him. One dressed like a fatter Iron Man, one who looked like a blue Mickey Mouse, and one that was some sort of off-brand Pikachu. All four of them gathered around me. And even though I couldn't see their real faces under the masks, I could tell that they were ready to hurt me. "Why are you doing this?" I pleaded. "You know why," the fake Elmo muttered. The man in the superhero costume reached into his spandex pants and pulled out a knife. "Give us your money," he said. "All of it." He spoke loudly enough for other people to hear him, but no one did anything. No one even looked in our direction. I slowly pulled out my wallet and opened it for him to see. I didn't bring a lot of cash with me, just two $20 bills. "This is all I have," I told them. Elmo pulled back his furry fist and punched me right in the jaw. "You owe us way more than that," he said.
Where's the rest of it?
While Elmo held me against the wall, the superhero pushed his knife against the side of my throat. Another character grabbed my cash and threw my empty wallet onto the ground. I could hear the costumed men whisper to each other, but I didn't know what they were saying. It sounded like they came to some sort of agreement, though. Elmo nodded his head, and then told me, "If you don't fork up the rest of the cash, we're gonna take a finger." The superhero pulled back the knife and grabbed my arm. They were serious! He was going to cut off my pinky! I screamed for help, but no one cared. I could see Tommy watching this all happen in the distance, so I begged for him to save me. He just stared, and then he mouthed out two words. "I'm sorry."
What was going on? Why would my own brother set me up like this? I begged for the men in costumes to explain what was going on. How much money did they need?
Elmo said, "Your brother took 20,000 bucks from us. He said you would pay us back." I didn't understand. Why would Tommy take money from these guys? He had an on-campus job. He had a scholarship. Unless it was all a lie. Unless he'd failed out of his classes and gotten mixed up with these people. That had to be it. And the worst part was, Tommy didn't look guilty at all. His expression was completely blank. As the superhero pressed the knife against the base of my finger, I blurted out, I need to go to an ATM. I'll give you everything."
"Good man," Elmo said as he patted me on the head.
The closest ATM was near my brother, so the costumed men guided me in that direction. When we reached the ATM, one of the men gave me back my wallet. They were still surrounding me, so I couldn't escape. I typed in my PIN number and tried to withdraw the $20,000 amount, even though I knew I didn't have that much in my account. When an error message came up on the screen, I decided to use that as my distraction. I shouted,
"Oh my God! Tommy stole from me too! He has the money on him!"
This caused enough confusion among the costumed men that I was able to wriggle free and run away. As I raced out of there, I watched the mascots chase after Tommy. I didn't stop to see what they were going to do to him. After that, I went straight to the airport and rebooked my flight back home. Tommy tried to call me twice, but I didn't answer. I still don't know how Tommy had gotten mixed up with these criminals. I don't think I'll ever know the full story. All I know is that a few weeks later, Tommy flew back to Nebraska and moved in with our parents. He refused to say anything about his time in New York. And he was missing three fingers.
I hate Times Square. It's filled with slow-moving tourists and people dressed as characters harassing you to take a picture with them. Last year, I was running late to see The Phantom of the Opera on Broadway when I got caught in a slow Times Square tourist herd. I had about 10 minutes before the start of the show, so I had to book it. Normally, I would be patient and go with the slow flow of traffic, but this time I couldn't. Using my elbows, I weaseled my way through the crowd. As I maneuvered through, I could tell people thought I was being rude. That's life sometimes, I guess. Right when I was about to break out of the pack of people, one of them said, excuse you?" I turned around to apologize, and I explained why I was running late for the show. I turned back around to run to the theater when I ran into Woody, the Toy Story character. Together, we fell to the ground. He put his arms around me as we tumbled. Suddenly, I was on my back with a massive Woody on top of me. I looked through the mesh of the eyes and could almost make out deep blue eyes behind them. He lingered on top of me. I shoved him off and tried to ask if he was okay. He sat up and continued to stare at me in silence. I apologized for running into him and headed towards my show. I made it just in time for the grand chandelier to rise from the stage over the heads of the audience. When the show was over, I walked out and there was a Woody character waiting. The hair on my neck stood up. I wondered if it was the same one as before, but there are so many of these characters running around. I convinced myself it was a different one and didn't give it another thought. I headed towards the train. When I walked out to the center of Times Square, I saw four other Woody characters. Seeing so many gave me some peace. The chances it was that specific Woody I ran into were probably small. I continued on my way. When I got on the train, some street performers were dancing in the aisle. As I watched them, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a big woody head gazing in my direction. My heart skipped a beat. I looked closer and realized it was just the head of the costume. The man wearing it had taken the head off and looked ahead. Woody's eyes were fixed on me. I felt uneasy, but told myself again it was a coincidence. There's so many of these characters running around. Still, I got off a stop early, even if it meant more walking. If that man followed me, I didn't want him to know what stop I got off at. I walked off the train and looked around to look at the man dressed as Woody one more time. This time, he was looking at me. He had dark hair and light blue eyes. His stare was intense. It felt like he was looking through me at my soul and knew my deepest, darkest secrets. His eyes remained on me as the train zoomed off. I got home as fast as I could, constantly looking over my shoulder for someone following me. I told my roommates about it, and they all thought it was a funny, lighthearted story. A Woody stalking me home. Even though it gave them a good laugh, that man's face haunted me as I fell asleep. His stare was so fanatical. His eyes didn't leave me as the train left the station. In the following weeks, I looked over my shoulder more. There were times when I had a strong feeling someone was watching me. I looked for the man's face in the people I passed walking down the street. When I worked in coffee shops, I looked at every person to see if he was there. I did this on the train too. Some nights, I dreamed of him staring at me. I would wake up in a cold sweat. I was so anxious, but I had no real reason to think someone was following or watching me. It's not like I ever noticed someone walking behind me or noticed the same face in the places I went. I talked to my friends about it to try to shake the feeling. They laughed at the idea of the Woody Man following me. I understand the humor, but I couldn't shake the nerves. A couple more weeks passed, and I stopped being so nervous. The uneasiness began to fade. I still felt like someone was watching me at times, but I was able to convince myself it was nothing. One night, my roommates convinced me to go out with them. I used to go out with them a lot, but when I had the whole incident with the Woody fellow, I started staying in out of paranoia. I was excited to go out. I wore my new black satin halter dress and was ready to blow off some steam. You say I make you nervous, a tragedy, I'm a beautiful disaster. Some finance bros were with us and bought us shots all night. We danced, laughed, and were having a great time. But as the night progressed, my paranoia started to creep in again. I scanned the room for those cold blue eyes I saw on the train, and I didn't see them. I told myself I was just anxious from drinking, and I tried to continue having a good time. I decided some dancing would do me good. So I grabbed one of the finance guys and headed to the dance floor. His name was Jerry. The beat flowed through both of us. I looked up from the floor to see the guy I grabbed dancing with another girl. Who was I dancing with? I turned around and saw the man from the train. I gasped and stepped back. But before I could get a good distance between us, he grabbed my wrist and pulled me into him. I've been waiting for us to meet again like this, he said into my ear. I got a whiff of his breath, and it was awful. He reeked of raw hot dogs. I tried to pull away, but he just pulled me closer. I've been watching ever since we first met. You remember me, right, baby? I tried to push him, but his grip was too strong. We can be together. I knew you were the one when I looked into your eyes for the first time. I wanted to vomit. I tried to talk to him. I'm sorry, I don't know you. Please let me go. No, he growled. You're mine. I have you now. I'm not yours, I yelled, breaking away from his grip. Jerry saw what was happening and left the girl he was dancing with. Is there a problem? He asked. The man tried to pull me away, but Jerry stopped him. I don't think she wants to go with you, man. The creep looked at me like he expected me to defend him. I took the opportunity to escape his grasp and hid behind my new friend. Leave her alone, Jerry said sternly. The creep then charged at him. He tackled Jerry and everyone around us backed up. My stalker was on top of him, punching his face over and over until Jerry's face was covered in blood. Thankfully, Security intervened and pulled the creep off of him. The police were called because of the fight. The Woody character spent the night in jail. Jerry ended up pressing charges against the Woody character. Turns out his name was Ronald. I was able to get his information to file a restraining order in case he ever came near me again. I haven't seen him since, but I can't help but scan every room I enter for his icy blue eyes. My name is Jessica, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. My daughter Lucy is almost 2 now, and I have devoted most of my time to taking care of her. Because my husband and I moved right before I gave birth, I never really got the time to make any friends in my new city. Over the last few months, I've really started to feel lonely. My husband is amazing and supportive, but he has so many friends from work, and I'm usually just stuck at home with Lucy. The other day, I was complaining to my sister about this, and she recommended Bumble. I told her that I wasn't interested in a dating app, but she explained that I could use the Bumble BFF feature to find friends. I wasn't really sold on the idea, but that afternoon, while rewatching episodes of Bluey for the 100th time, I realized that I'd give it a shot. Right away, I found a woman named Beth who lived in my area. Like me, she was a new stay-at-home mother. We chatted for a bit, and I got a really good feeling about her. We had a lot of the same interests, and it seemed like she was an amazing mother. We agreed to meet up at my place and get to know each other in person. I can't tell you how excited I was. Finally, I was making a new friend. I assumed she'd bring her daughter with her, but when she showed up at my doorstep, she was alone. She looked just like her photo, so I didn't expect anything was wrong at first. While Lucy played in the corner, Beth and I sat on my sofa drinking coffee and chatting. I tried to ask her about her interest and hobbies, but she kept bringing the conversation back to my daughter. It was like that was all she wanted to talk about. The whole reason I wanted to chat with her was so that I'd get to talk about other things besides my family. After a while, things got even stranger. She was asking about Lucy's medical history and food allergies and stuff. No matter how much I tried to change the topic, she just kept asking things that were way too personal and honestly none of her business. Eventually, Lucy started getting fussy, so I needed to put her down for a nap. I used that as an excuse to politely ask Beth to leave. She stood up, walked over to my daughter, and then smelled her hair for a really long time. After that, she was gone. I was so disappointed. I knew that I didn't want to see Beth ever again. I deleted Bumble from my phone and tried to forget about the whole thing. Thankfully, I never gave Beth my phone number. I assumed she'd take the hint, but less than a week later, she showed up unannounced on my doorstep. Her arms were filled with presents for Lucy. She must have bought at least a dozen really expensive toys and stuffed animals. I wanted to tell her to leave, but I didn't have the courage to turn her away. After all, it looked like she'd spent a lot of money on my daughter. So I opened the door and reluctantly let her inside. She dropped all the toys onto the floor and then ran over and gave me a hug. She acted like we were best friends or something. I didn't know what to do, so I offered to make her some coffee. Lucy was napping at the time, so at least she wouldn't have to see Beth. I have an open floor plan to my house, so I was able to keep an eye on her while I was in the kitchen making instant coffee. I could see that she was walking around the room examining all our family photos. Before I could finish the coffee, Beth asked if she could use my bathroom. I did not want her wandering around my house, especially with my daughter alone in the other room, but I didn't know how to say no. "Fine," I told her. "First door on the right." She hurried out of the room. She was gone for a long time, and I got this weird feeling in my stomach. I walked into the hallway and saw that the bathroom door was closed and the water was running. Beth must have still been inside. Just in case, I looked into Lucy's room. I guess my mother's intuition was kicking in. And thank God it did, because when I opened the door, I saw Beth standing over Lucy's bed. Her hands were outstretched as if she was about to pick Lucy up. "What are you doing?" I shouted. Beth looked at me, then reached for Lucy. It was clear she was trying to take her away. I don't remember what happened next. I was too shocked and frantic. Without realizing what I was doing, I raced toward Beth and tackled her to the ground. Lucy had woken up. She sat in her bed, confused by what was happening. She wasn't scared, though. Beth jumped up and tried to climb through the window. I grabbed her by her ponytail and yanked her back inside. She screamed out in pain as hair ripped from her head and she flopped onto the ground. I turned to Lucy and told her to run into the bathroom and wait for me. I said that Mommy was just playing a little game. Lucy nodded and left. Now, it was just me and Beth. Beth stood up to face me. She must have slammed into the windowsill because her lip was bleeding. "What the hell are you doing?" I shouted. "Do you even have a daughter?" She shook her head and said that Lucy was hers now. I punched her in the face. We got into a wild, violent fight. It was the first fight of my life, but I wouldn't stop. I think I broke her arm. I just pinned her against the wall when a voice called out behind me. "What are you doing here?" My husband was standing in the doorway, a horrified expression on his face. He wasn't looking at me though. He was looking at Beth. He knew her. Beth said, "That little brat is the only reason you won't be with me. You know you don't love your wife anymore." I waited for my husband to explain himself. Was he really sleeping with Beth? Did he really talk about running away with her? He couldn't even look at me. He just stared at his feet. That told me everything I needed to know. Before I could say anything, Beth screamed, "He doesn't love you anymore. He wants to start a family with me." Without even thinking, I punched her so hard that she fell backward and lost consciousness. While my husband tried desperately to explain himself, I pulled out my phone and called the police. They arrived just a few minutes later, giving me enough time to make sure Lucy was okay. The cops asked me what happened, but I made my husband explain everything. I wanted to hear him admit that his mistress was a psycho who tried to steal our so that the three of them could run off together. Of course, they took Beth away. And despite my husband repeating over and over that he made a mistake and he was sorry, I told him to leave. Thankfully, Lucy is too young to really process what happened. Right now, it's just the two of us. But I have reinstalled Bumble, and this time, I am not looking for a BFF. I was late for work, again. I've been working at Farber and Franklin for just over 3 months, and I'd already been late twice. My boss Kevin had given me a warning about it, and I promised to be on time from now on. And yet, there I was, scrambling to make it in time. I'd stopped at Dunkin' Donuts because it was my turn to buy snacks for the office, but I had no idea how slow the line would be. It was moving fast at first, but the guy right in front of me seemed to be one of those slow motion people who wants to look at every choice at least twice before he makes his selection. Normally, I try not to cause a scene, but I couldn't wait any longer. I leaned close to him and whispered, "Can you hurry up, please? I'm running late." He spun around just to glare at me, and then he turned back towards the worker. If anything, he was moving even slower now just to annoy me. "Please," I whispered, "I have to buy donuts for the office, and I'm running kind of late." "Should have gotten here earlier then," he said, without even bothering to turn around. I looked at the worker, silently pleading with my eyes. She was an older woman with a bright red birthmark under her eye. She was wearing a wrinkled dress, not the usual worker uniforms. There was something very unpleasant about her, something almost suspicious. She looked back at me and smiled, as if she was happy that I was running late. I glanced down at my phone. I was already 2 minutes late. By the time I get everything and drive to the office, I'd be at least 15 minutes late. Kevin was definitely going to notice. He already had it in for me, and he was always first in line for Friday morning donuts. He would not be happy. The man finally ordered, but when he pulled out his wallet, he started fumbling with his coins. I watched in horror as he started slowly counting them out. He was going to pay for everything in coins. I wasn't sure if that was his plan all along, or if this was just another way for him to punish me for asking to hurry up. He was up to $2 worth of quarters by the time I'd had enough. I grabbed a 10 from my wallet and shoved it at the worker. "Let me pay for him," I said. The man glared at me, took his donuts, and left. I rattled off my order to the woman and got what I wanted in less than a minute. I paid for my donuts and was about to race off when the woman said, "I hate you all." At first, I wasn't sure if I heard her correctly, but the way she was glaring at me made me realize that I had. I didn't have time to respond though. When I got back in my car, I started to speed out of the parking lot, but another car was blocking the exit. It was the man again, and he was waiting for me. I honked, but he wouldn't move. I rolled down my window and shouted at him, "Please, I need to go." He didn't answer. I was filled with rage. How could this guy be so petty? If I got fired, it would 100% be his fault. I pulled up my emergency brake, but kept my car running. I jumped out and walked towards his driver's side. I saw the man through his window, but he didn't look at me. He was hunched over, his head against the steering wheel. What was going on? I reached through the open window and touched his shoulder. He slumped to the side, revealing a face that was bright red. His eyes were wide open and blank, and his tongue hung out the side of his mouth. He was dead. Donut crumbs speckled his chin. I shook him to see if he'd come to life, but that just made his body flop to the side. His foot must have fallen off the brake because his car started to slowly glide forward right into the road. I couldn't do anything except watch in horror as the dead man's car rolled across the highway and crashed into a traffic light. Clearly, this man had been poisoned. Something was wrong with the donuts. I ran back towards the building and noticed that the back door was half open. I pushed my way through and found the worker, the real worker, crumpled down on the kitchen floor. He was poisoned too. That's when I knew that the old woman with the birthmark had snuck in and done something to all the donuts. Without thinking, I ran through the kitchen and into the main lobby, but it was empty. The woman had already left. It was all a blur after that, but from what I remember, I called the police and then called my boss to tell him that I wasn't going to come into work for a while. He was furious, as I expected, even after I told him what had happened. He said he didn't care, and he fired me on the spot. As I waited for the police to arrive, the situation seemed to crash down on me. I didn't care about losing my job. I was miserable there anyway. Mostly, I was relieved that I didn't accidentally poison all my coworkers. I would have too if that man hadn't eaten his donut first. I guess I owe my life to him. It's been a couple weeks since this all went down, and I still don't know who that woman was or why she'd want to poison strangers. Maybe I'd never find out. But believe me when I say that you should never get angry at people you don't know. They might just end up saving you.